This, of course, on Tua Tagovailoa's playlist at Dolphins practice yesterday.
Yeah. This gets me ready. This gets me ready to go. Yeah. First day of pads. Let me go hit a pulling guard at 350 through the B gap. That's what I need.
Yeah. Crowder, I'm curious. You're on the field of training camp, and it's 800 degrees outside. And you hear that first, whatever the first classic rock song was, and then it goes into this. What is your reaction as you stand in the stretching line or whatever you're doing at this point in the in practice?
Every cuss word you could ever think of in your life.
towards Tua Tagovailoa?
We actually, you know what? What was it? Was it 08 when we brought in all them big white linemen? Because we run the music in the weight room, and then Jake Grove and Jake Smiley and Jake Long, a bunch of damn Jakes came in, big white Jakes.
Justin Smiley.
And they Justin Smiley, okay, a bunch of J, big white boys with the name J starting. And they were like, at one point during camp, they were like, we need some country music in here. And they changed the setting, and everybody on the team stopped working out. We looked over at the little closet where the music is. And then the strength coach was like, yeah, fellas, this ain't going to work. Put back on whatever station we were listening to. And yeah, no, we don't listen to no damn Lion King. Get your ass out of here.
Tua Tagovailoa, ladies and gentlemen. I want to talk more about Dolphins camp. I'll get to some notes there in a second. And we're running a little behind. Chris Whittingham is going to join us in the next segment. Just a quick Inter-Miami update before they begin Leagues Cup play tomorrow. I just want to remind everybody before we do headlines that if you want to see the Zach Brown Band at the Sphere in Las Vegas this December, well, we're giving you that chance. Very easy to enter. Log on to the Odyssey app. Hopefully you have that already. And listen to our radio station, WQAM, for 1 hour. And for more chances to win, you can listen every day, and you could be the winner. If you are, you receive a round-trip airfare to Vegas, two tickets to see Zach Brown, and a two-night stay at the Venetian Resort in Las Vegas, which is directly connected to the Sphere. So don't miss this opportunity. Log on to the Odyssey app right now. This is a national contest. For more info, go to odyssey.com/Zach. Special thanks to the Messina Touring Group. Let's do headlines brought to you by Doral Kia. Doral Kia, choose from over 500 new Kia models in inventory like the Sportage, Sorento, and Telluride. Remember, when it comes to Kia, the great deals are at Doral Kia. I'll start here. You guys saw who was in the orange jersey today at Dolphins practice. Best performer in yesterday's practice. Today was the first padded practice, by the way.
Who's that?
Chop Robinson. In the orange jersey today.
Lion King songs? Did he go with the Snow White soundtrack?
I would imagine he will not.
This stuff. Isn't it neat? When did you think my collection's complete?
Banger. Wow.
Banger, bro.
Good job.
When did you think that a girl who has everything? Look at these tools, treasures untold. How many wonders can one cavern hold? I know the whole song.
Girl dad. Tell me you're a girl dad without telling me you're a girl dad.
Sure.
That was excellent.
She's got everything.
Joe Shad tweeted this today. Chop Robinson is a rising star, not just according to me, according to his teammates. It's something that I know we've talked about a little bit where, okay, the what ifs. JP, Jalen Phillips, stay healthy. What's Bradley Chubb going to look like a full year off after, what was it, ACL plus injury? The ACL plus injury, yes. Which ended up being plus. all right, those two guys stay healthy, right, Crowder? And then you mix in Chop Robinson, who clearly had a great practice yesterday, and we're all very excited about following the second half of last year's season. If, and I'm using if again because we have to, those three guys. The idea here is if they put pressure on the quarterback and then you mix in Kenneth Grant, who apparently is just bulldozing everybody. He's the toughest dude at practice right now from all the reporters. It should help alleviate, you know, some of the issues or the shortcomings of the secondary, right? But like what could that look like if Chop's healthy and he takes a second step this year, or another leap in his second year, picks up where he left off last year. And then JP's healthy, hopefully, knock on wood, and Bradley Chubb also, at the very least, kind of looks like Bradley Chubb prior to the injury. Like, that's scary, right, for opposing quarterbacks?
It'll be stupid. And you actually told us, we interviewed somebody, and you were saying that they have Jalen Phillips standing up and rushing in the middle.
Yeah, like that was something I picked up on a couple days ago on Twitter that I saw. Yeah,
you saw that too, Josh. So that's what it would be. It would be you get in third and 6-7 plus, and you have Chubb and Phillips and Chop on the field, one guy roaming around, so you can make that one-on-one. It's what they do with Micah Parsons in Dallas, where he just walks around and he literally picks which offensive lineman he wants to pick on. Okay, the left guard sucks. Hey, move over. I'm about to attack him. That's what it could be. And the thing is, with Chop, the criticism was he can't set the edge. I'm going to tell y'all a secret about a Hall of Famer by the name of Jason Taylor. He couldn't set a damn edge. But when you can't play the run that strong, you got to go out there and get you 15-plus sacks a season. And that's what JT did. That's the Hall of Famer, one of the best of all time, 06 Defensive Player of the Year. But to have those three guys out there on third and longs, you got 2 seconds, 2.5 seconds max, because they're about to beat one of these little fat boys in the middle. So you have either Sealer or Grant, and then you have those three guys walking around. Somebody's in trouble on that offensive line of the opposing team.
I'm glad you brought up Zach Sealer, because you look at the season he had last year while both Phillips and Chubb were hurt, and it was basically just Sealer and Chop Robinson essentially as the Dolphins' two best pass rushers. Imagine how that opens things up for him when you've got all three guys healthy and on the field at the same time. The hope, of course, is just that the secondary can hold up at least a little bit, because I pulled up the depth chart on here, and obviously you've got the three red markings next to the name, which is never what you want to see this early, with Davis and Melifonwu and with Cater. You're already thin there. But that pass rush, as we talked about yesterday too, it should give a little bit of cover to those defensive backs as well. I'm really excited to see what this front seven looks like. I remember going into last year, like, that was one of the bigger concerns, because you're trying to replace Christian Wilkins. You still don't have Bradley Chubb. What's Chop Robinson going to be? And I'm looking at it right now on paper, and the Dolphins have to feel really, really good about what their front seven looks like.
Yeah, and Anthony Weaver can do a lot with it. When I get deep into football, Hawk really doesn't like when I get too deep into football and start talking about ET and TE stunts and all that, but I'll do a simple numbers game. There's Sealer, Chop, Chubb, and Phillips. That's four. There's five linemen. One guy can get doubled. The other three guys have one-on-ones. You can create that any way you want to. Anthony Weaver, the DC, can create – you can pile all three. You can have three of them on one side of the line. They have to roll that way. So that's a guaranteed for the backside defensive end to have a one-on-one. So if Chop can just whoop this right tackle, put everybody else on the left side and let Chop whoop this right tackle. If Phillips can whoop this right tackle, like, you can really play with it, and you can still leave seven guys back, or eight guys back, whatever it is, in secondary and coverage, where you could just get four guys rushing. That would be the exciting part. You can't have Chubb and Phillips and Chop out there at the same time in the run game on first and 10, because they can't play tackle. Like, none of those three can play tackle. But if you can get in third and longs or second and longs, you can put we used to call it a jet nickel. Just a bunch of fast guys out there and let them cut them loose. There are going to be three guys with single blocks, and that offensive line's in trouble.
Huh?
I'm sorry. I football nerd out a little bit when you ask me about schematics, because I remember we used to do the schematic thing. Yeah. You know,
hey, Tua, throw a 50-yard bomb to Tyreek. All right, that's all I need. No, but seriously, Crowder, we don't have time today. I want to dedicate at some point before the season, or before the first preseason game, I want to get your thoughts on the linebackers, because we're not really talking about them. Jordan Brooks, Tyrell Dodson, but apparently today KJ Britt, I was reading in the Herald, had a good showing, and I keep hearing about Willie Gay, like, nonstop. Willie Gay is doing things. Willie Gay is making noise. I don't know, like, how much we can take away from that in training camp, but at some point we're gonna have to talk about the linebackers.
Solana, I have to see him. That's the funniest part. I said a couple weeks ago, I know Brooks because Brooks was here last year. Willie Gay and Dotson, and I've never seen them play. I have to watch a preseason game to see if these dudes can play. If they can go, like Jerome Baker could go. That was the last linebacker that I really saw play and was like, that dude can play ball. Landon Roberts was a banger. Chris Brooks is a banger. Like I can watch a couple series and see if a linebacker can play ball or not.
Brooks had like 150 tackles last year. If he stays healthy, I mean that dude's a baller.
No one wants that ball draws a crowd. You don't want Brooks to know you have that ball. That's all I know about him.
So the big takeaways from training camp today. Ashton Davis is a story. Dolphin safety. We just talked about, you know, the injuries to the secondary. We know about Melifonwu. He's rehabbing an injury. Today, Ashton Davis went down, was reportedly non-contact injury. Not good. He was in a walking boot and crutches after practice. Kohu did not practice for the second straight day because of that leg injury back on Saturday. I still think we're waiting to hear some sort of like major update on what the injury actually is that he sustained. I'm sure that'll come at some point prior to next Sunday's first preseason game. And then I'll just read you here, MiamiHerald.com from Omar Kelly. Top performers, Alexander Mattison, who we were talking about. I know, Crowder, you like Ollie Gordon II, who the Dolphins drafted, because he's just a big dude. But this is one of the more interesting, I think, battles. Who's going to back up Jalen Wright, who's the backup to the Dolphins starting running back? Like, Mattison has done it in Minnesota and in Las Vegas, and he has a pretty good track record, pretty good resume when it comes to shaking your head, Appel. He's not going to be asked to be the lead back. He's just specifically going to be asked to come in and pick up short yardage situations where the Miami Dolphins have struggled. And I was reading earlier, like, he has a track record of being good in those short yardage situations. So just, you know, an interesting battle because I don't know, like, I know Ollie Gordon was drafted for that purpose, but Mattison today, according to Omar Kelly, produced a handful of respectable runs that would have given an onlooker the impression that Miami is a physical rushing attack.
Oh, Josh, you were shaking your head. I don't know if you knew nothing special.
Well, I remember, I know that last year he had an all right year as far as short yardage goes, but in general, I think his career has kind of been a disappointment. For me, the Dolphins' short yardage problems are less on who's carrying the ball and more on the guys who are trying to block for the guy carrying the ball. That's so fair. The only one that really blows up that argument was Lusaka Polite. Probably didn't matter. He could go 1-11. He'd still get you the 2 yards you need on 4th-and-1. But I don't know. Alexander Mattison doesn't really inspire a lot of confidence. I mean, averaged almost 3 yards per carry last year. That's just not very good.
Yeah.
I'd imagine they like Ollie Gordon for his upside, and I wonder if that's a practice squad candidate situation there, and they just roll with HN, Wright, and Mattison and go from there. But if Madison's going to be behind Jalen Wright, like you would expect, like Jalen Wright has that physical build to be the short yardage back anyways. So I don't know what they do there. I'm not a big Alexander Mattison guy.
Yeah, no, my thing, I like Ollie Gordon because he's just big.
He was great in college.
He's gigantic.
He was great in college.
He was a monster in college. He put the, you know, he could really put a team on his back in college, and we've seen that not translate. But almost to further that conversation like you started with, Pell, where you can't run the same plays with Mattison and Gordon that you run with Achan and Wright. Achan and Wright are track stars. They're 4-2 guys, 4-2 eights and all that stuff. I want to see an offense that looks nothing like the offense we've seen over years. I want to see a bunch of tight ends in the game. I want to see a 240-pound running back 8 yards deep like Derrick Henry lines up. The defense knows you're about to run downhill. To your point about the O-line, they know we're about to run downhill. We know we're about to run downhill. Grown men have to knock other grown men where they don't want to go. And that's what the running game that I think we need. We don't have to change up the zone scheme and the jet sweeps and all the cute stuff that McDaniel loves. I still think that can work. But when we get in 3rd-and-1, I don't need no motion. I don't need no resets. Line up in a goal line situation and run the ball straight downhill and go get 36 inches. And that's why I like Ollie Gordon, Madison, those guys. I think that's what this offense is missing. I think that's what hurt us a lot last year on third down and fourth down conversions. And I think that's what you have to be able to do if you want to win in December, January in the playoffs. You have to be able to whoop somebody's ass at the line of scrimmage where a half a yard, if we can't get a half a yard, we don't deserve to win a game.
I do feel better, and I'm really basing this off of just names on a piece of paper and what we've read so far through a week and a half of training camp. But this is honestly as good as I felt about a Dolphins offensive line, probably since Teron Armstead maybe first got here. But even then, you still had the weak link on the inside. Like, I like how they're set up with Paul, Jonah, Aaron Brewer, James Daniels, if he stays healthy, and Austin Jackson. I think that's a really good, solid starting offensive line. They got to stay healthy and on the field together. But on paper, that's honestly as good as I felt about a Dolphins offensive line going into a season in a long time.
I'm with you. And that play should be called first, get a first down.
Yeah.
Fat boys, knock the other fat boys out of the way. Hey, Ollie, Madison, whoever it is, go run into somebody's back as hard as you can.
It was go the most get frustrating.
18 inches. Go get 18 inches. That you should be able to get 18 inches. I don't give a damn who you are.
It was when the you most go frustrating part.
Light, it's like that was what he was known for with the Dolphins. Now the complete opposite of that. Nobody can get that 18 inches.
It was the most frustrating part, and it has been consistently since McDaniel's been here, aside from injuries, is the fact that there's constantly pre-snap penalties, constantly. We do this every year, and I get it. There's a lot of motion in the offense. It's a tough offense, but like, figure it out. If you're implementing an offense and it continues to shoot you in the foot time and time again, you've got to be able to either adjust or figure out a way to get these guys to learn it properly. And the fact that the Dolphins have been by far, in terms of percentage, the worst team in the McDaniel era in the NFL at converting short yardage situations. Like that can't continue in year four. It just can't.
And because of their shortcomings running between the tackles, McDaniel then tries to get all cutesy with these little gadget plays on these third and fourth and short.
Oh, the jet sweep to Tyreek Hill. I mean, oh my God.
Honestly, I'd rather you just hand the ball off every time and lose 2 yards than have to watch 17 motions and a jet sweep. Like, just, I'd rather you keep it simple and get stopped than do all the cutesy BS and look even more embarrassing.
Listen, stop me if I'm wrong. Let's talk about the AFC big dogs. And this is what it's going to come down to. If they do make the playoffs, they're going to have to beat one of these teams. If the Kansas City Chiefs have a fourth and short, Isaiah Pacheco is getting a dive. If the Ravens have a fourth and short, they're giving it to that damn defensive end in the backfield by the name of Derrick Henry. If the Buffalo Bills, it's a little different because they're going to give it to their defensive end that plays quarterback, and he's going to quarterback sneak it to get 18 inches. We know what's coming. We all know what's coming. We could yell. I could tell them, oh, we're playing Buffalo. Oh, it's fourth and short. Quarterback sneak. Get ready. You're not going to stop him. We need that. So if the Dolphins, I'll ask y'all, if the Dolphins are fourth and short, what happens? A jet sweep to Tyreek Hill?
I know exactly what happens. The first time they're going to try Alec Ingold up the middle, he's going to lose 2 yards. I know. I've seen this already. He's going to lose 2 yards. And then they're gonna try to bring in like Jalen Wright, some sort of package. So it's like, oh, maybe we're going to throw the ball. Maybe Devon Achane is going to come in motion. And then Jalen Wright's going to get dropped 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And then the next time, Tyreek Hill, they're going to fake the jet sweep. They're going to pitch it. And guess what? They're going to lose 5 yards. And then the next time, it's going to go back to Alec Ingold, and he's going to lose 1 yard this time. And then they'll do the jet sweep with Tyreek Hill, and he'll lose 4 yards that time. And then, you know, I don't know what happens then. Then Kenneth Grant, here, just do something. Here, Kenneth Grant, just go run somebody over, because I lose my mind every time. And by the way, in between all of that, Julian Hill, false start. So now you're 5 yards.
I was waiting for you to say I'm going to bump it. Well, you missed the third try. They're going to have a Julian Hill false start. They're going to put the punt team out there instead.
So we're going from fourth and one to fourth and six automatically. Now we don't know what's going on.
Or they're going to get it, and Julian Hill's going to pick up a holding penalty instead.
Crazy, man. All right. Chris Whittingham's going to join us in the next segment just to round out headlines. Inter Miami, they do begin Leagues Cup play tomorrow. They're going to host Atlas at 7:30 at Chase Stadium. We'll talk about that coming up. Plus, Los Marlins are back at it tonight, 7:45 p.m. First pitch. They'll play the Cardinals. We're counting down to MLB trade deadline. And when I say we're counting down, I think Appel might actually have a tracker, but that's it. He's the only one counting down. Him and Marlins fans are counting down to the trade deadline. We'll take a break. We're going to talk Inter Miami coming up in the next segment with Chris Whittingham after these commercial breaks on the Hawk. I've never ended a segment that way. I've never ended a segment with after these commercial breaks. More Hawk Big Crowder and Salada.
You're listening to the Hawk Crowder and Solana Show.
Well, I love Zephyr Hills.
There is no Zephyr Hills. It's Zephyr Hills. We've been over this.
These commercials are over, and now we're back.
No, these commercial breaks are over.
On the Hawkman Crowder and Solana Show. What a weird outro by me. That's I guess it's witty. Woody makes me nervous, I think. I think that's what it is. Chris Whittingham.
I was in the waiting room while you did that.
Chris Whittingham is on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale at one location, Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan, toyotaofhollywood.com. Chris Whittingham is a commentator, host on CBS Sports Golazo. He's also an MLS commentator, Apple TV. And tomorrow, Leagues Cup kicks off. Inter Miami, who won Leagues Cup. We all remember famously Leo Messi heroics. They'll play three group stage games beginning tomorrow. They have Atlas from La Liga MX coming 7:30 at Chase Stadium. Woody, appreciate your time. Before we get into Leagues Cup and whether or not you're excited for it, we talked a lot on this show last week on Friday about Leo Messi getting suspended, Jordi Alba getting suspended. I hated the move by the MLS. I thought it was dumb. I thought Leo Messi and Jordi Alba, I get it. It's a rule and it is what it is. But I thought these guys have brought, especially Messi, brought so much attention, so much eyeball, so much revenue to the MLS. They put on a fantastic showing in the Club World Cup on behalf of the MLS, the only team to get out of group stages in the MLS. And it's not crazy that they deserve a rest. So that's where I'm coming from. But just your, you know, your overall, I guess, thoughts on the suspension and the reaction to it.
Yeah, I mean, you're mentioning all these things that they have done for MLS, but that was not an MLS competition. Whereas I do think that the MLS All-Star Game is a show that they're very proud of that they put on. That's a big league event. There's really two tentpole attractions that the league runs. They are the MLS Cup Final and the All-Star Game. And the All-Star Game is a big deal. We're all 27 players getting together. You're reaching into Mexico a little bit by bringing in all the Liga MX All-Stars. And Messi is part of that showpiece. I imagine he was part of the way that they sold tickets and part of the way that they marketed that event. And so for him not to be there, I think I left some fans in Austin a little disappointed. And I think left some other people kind of wondering, wait a second, if other players, by the way, there were other players in MLS who went from playing in Austin on Wednesday night to playing in an MLS game on Friday night. As a matter of fact, I called one of them, LAFC playing Portland Timbers. Denny Bouanga played in the game on Wednesday night, was on a plane to LA on Thursday, and played in an MLS game on Friday night and went the full 90 minutes. So it's not like it was an untenable thing. So I think from the league standpoint, I don't think they wanted to do this. I don't think anyone wanted to upset Lionel Messi, which Jorge Mas came out and said that he was upset, and I believe him. I don't think anyone wanted to do this, but you have a rule on the books. There's already some consternation around the transfer of Rodrigo De Paul, who is without question a designated player, but is not being listed as such until the end of the season. I think if there's a reputation that Miami has with the other 29 teams, it's not, oh, these guys are punished too harshly by the league. It's they kind of get away with a lot, and there's a lot of favor shown towards Lionel Messi. And by the way, I think that there should be, because Miami is doing the most by far of any team in the league to drive the league forward. So I understand where MLS was coming from, and I understand that they kind of had to do it, especially considering kind of the sporting implications of playing the number one team in the East. They played out a 0-0 draw, but I don't think anyone wanted to make that decision.
Well, Chris, the only thing I can compare this to is like the load management thing in the NBA, where you have to play so many games to get superlatives. But isn't this just a dumb rule? Like, you're building the MLS up. And now your best players aren't going to play in this game. Now they can't play in another game. So now there's two right. games of your most prestigious players not playing in, and you're trying to build eyes. Is it just a dumb rule that they put in the books?
Well, it's not even just that it's another game. It was another game against the number one team in the league, FC Cincinnati. It was a rare game that was on Fox Sports 1, which is kind of another way that which a lot of people are talking about media wise. Oh, you got to get on cable. You got to get on TV because, the game's on Apple or on streaming. And it's a paywall. And there's all those debates that people can have. But it's a game that was on FS1. And Miami were also launching their third kit that night, which they wore in the game. And those are images that you want to have with Messi in them. So I understand what you're saying. I think this was kind of this rule, which, by the way, other big stars have been punished with before. Zlatan Ibrahimovic was playing for the LA Galaxy when they suspended him in 2018 for not playing in the All-Star game for the next game. I think it was designed because a lot of the big stars in the league are from other countries. And to be honest, the concept of All-Star games in other countries is a bit ridiculous. Like they don't understand it. They don't get it. They don't understand the appeal of it. And this is sort of a uniquely American thing. And it is a big event. If you go and look at, even without Messi, the YouTube views on the game, a lot of people checked him out. A lot of people watched it. It was an event on the Tuesday night in the Skills Challenge. They had iShow Speed, the big YouTuber who a lot of people watch. They're trying to make it into this thing that people are paying attention to. People do pay attention to it. And so they want their big guys there. And if you say, if you don't have any punishment for missing the game, I think a lot of players will go, I really can't be bothered. I don't want to go. Like, and next year it's in Charlotte. And if all your big stars opt out of it, then what do you have left as an event? And I do think still it's an important event for the league. So I don't know if a game suspension is the right punishment, but I think that they'll have to keep some kind of punishment if they're to try and keep this thing still a reasonably big event.
You mentioned Jorge Mas had said publicly that Leo Messi was not happy about this decision. Do you think it has any long-term, quote-unquote long-term implications on his future with Inter Miami and in MLS altogether?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a sweating that you have to do until that ink is dry on the contract and he's opening up the new stadium next year, because Lionel Messi ran it all the way to the end when he joined Inter Miami in the first place. Everyone thought he was going to stay at PSG, and then at seemingly the last minute, I think we now have come to know that there was always an implication for Miami to be in that reckoning, but I think until that ink is dry, you are a little bit nervous. That said, the very next day that the suspension was announced, they announced the signing of his buddy, Rodrigo De Paul, in front of a full stadium. And they announced them. They did a whole big thing and they sat next to each other. Right. I mean, yeah, his fit that day was, I mean, goodness me. Open buttons, chest hair showing, loose pants. Crazy. Crazy with the fits from him. But I think, like, you know, they sat next to each other for the full 90 minutes. I think it would be quite the pulling of the rug if Messi were to go, hey, come around to Miami. We'll play together for the next few years. And then, you know, before that loan even becomes a permanent transfer to Inter Miami, he leaves. So I think it would be still a big surprise if he left. But that said, I don't think the league is really in a position to upset him very much. And I think that they certainly flex that muscle of, hey, this could have a big impact, because that is Messi's leverage. And ultimately, you know, like, I think this is kind of the uncomfortable thing. Usually the NFL has every right to punish even its big. They went after Tom Brady for Deflategate, which Patriots fans felt was ridiculous. But they went after their biggest guy with a suspension, with punishments, and their biggest team at the time. Whereas I feel like there is a little bit of a different power dynamic, where if Lionel Messi goes somewhere else, he takes that economy somewhere else. And so I think, for the league, they, you know, I'm not saying they have to be careful, but I they still have to treat him as another player. But you risk upsetting the player if he decides I don't really want to be bothered with an All-Star game. But I actually am more interested in how this affects the next one. The next one's in Charlotte next year. Is he gonna, if he stays in the league, he will presumably make the All-Star team, and he will presumably be asked to come. What happens next year? So I think there are a lot of interesting dynamics around this.
Hey, you mentioned DePaul and his big entrance. I know, I believe, unless I've missed something in the last hour, the update is that he's not on the roster for tomorrow's game. That is perhaps possible to change if he's able to get his visa today. Overall, Rodrigo De Paul comes to Inter Miami. This move significantly increases their chances, not just to win the League's Cup, but I think the ultimate goal this year, more than anything, has to be to actually have playoff success. As yeah. much as, you know, Jordi Alba doesn't approve of the playoff system in the United States, but that's another argument. But this significantly increases their chances to do what would he go on and actually have that playoff success and look like a more, I guess, forward attacking team and not so reliant on set pieces as they've been now with Messi and Suarez up top.
I think it's a signing that no other team could make or has made. When you look at the amount of money that they'll end up spending, $17 million on a transfer fee and presumably a fairly hefty salary as well. Normally, players that can there haven't been that many in the history of MLS where a lot of money is spent on a player that much, $17 million. It's, I think, in the top five all time of transfer fees. But if you do, you're guaranteeing goals and assists. You're getting a player who's, you know, one of the best strikers in another league in the world, one of the best number 10s in another league in the world. To do it for a number eight, a midfielder who's meant to provide balance, I think it shows how much Inter Miami, first off, recognized an opportunity to go get a player that Messi obviously loves, but also how much everyone in the team recognizes that they need balance in midfield. And I think that's the biggest thing. They have Busquets, who's one of the greatest distributors of the ball in the history of the game. But they had no one in front of him that both provided the running, the necessary legs to cover the game, but also keep the team moving forward and have that ability on the ball. You kind of either had one or the other. You either had Yannick Bright or you had, let's say, Benjamin Kremaski, but you didn't have a player who could do both of those things. I think everyone recognized the need for it, and it is a signing that very few teams could have pulled off an MLS, or honestly would. Normally, as I said, if you're going to do that, you're spending it on goals, but I think for what Miami needed, this is a brilliant, perfect signing for them, and we'll see how they kind of manage the roster in future.
And you can probably laugh, Chris, because I don't know. I'm reading this. Bundesliga, Liga, Series A, La Liga, Lingue 1, CONCACAF. Is MLS trying to catch up with them, right? I thought about it when you said that they're doing all-star games and stuff. Why don't they just don't reinvent the wheel? Like, why don't they just do what they do? Why are they trying to do something different if you're trying to catch Bundesliga? Yeah. Why don't you do what Bundesliga does?
The Bundesliga, yes, got it.
they should rename it though. The Bundesliga does sound like a better name.
As you talk about MLS, I was looking like, why don't the hell they do what the Europeans are doing? It works.
We're just gonna have to research, find out what Bundesliga means in German. Every
now and then, one word for it. That is a complicated question. I'll sort of begin by saying one, you kind of have to recognize that there has been a real resistance to soccer in the United States, even the idea of calling it soccer as opposed to the world's football. There has always been, from even at the beginning, in 1994 when the World Cup came to then the foundation of MLS in 1996, there weren't business people that wanted to invest in the league. There weren't fans that wanted to come round. There weren't players that wanted to come here. There wasn't money involved in the system. And so I think from kind of the beginning, MLS has always kind of felt this desire to be not completely different, but a little different. And so you have an all-star game. Let's even say the first tiebreaker, if there is two teams tied on points, in every other league in the world, it's goal difference. In MLS, it's wins. Go and win the game. And so instead of incentivizing, limiting the damage, go win the game because that's the most important thing. And so I think there's always been kind of this, let's make this a little bit different. And if you're saying, well, why don't you just do what other leagues do? Other leagues have stadiums that are sold out to 60,000-70,000. Other leagues have the status of being the number one sport, whatever the NFL is in the United States, the Bundesliga is in Germany. And so you don't have that same level of status or money. And so I think, look, the ultimate way you solve this problem, and it's kind of both the beauty and the terrible thing about soccer, is you solve everything with money. There is no problem that money cannot solve. If you raise the salary cap 10 times by what it is now, if you go out and spend hundreds of millions of dollars, you can make your league better. But even, for example, the Saudi Pro League is doing that right now. They've spent probably $10 billion, $11 billion on their league, and very few people have felt that they've even really come close to the other. I think their best teams are as good as some of the other best leagues in Europe, but they haven't really solved that problem. So money alone gets you some of the way, but it's literally an insurmountable amount of money. It's hundreds of billions to be on a par with some of the big leagues in Europe. And so you have to do it incrementally in order to get there. You have to build up revenue streams and you have to try other things because you're in a crowded sports market where right now the status is you're probably the fifth league in America. So you got to do stunts. You got to do things that other leagues wouldn't have to do because they're the number one sport in the country and it's not even close. It's not even close. If you turned on the equivalent of this station in England, they would be talking about the Premier League 99% of the show and like cricket and the NFL or whatever for or rugby for 1% of the show. The amount of coverage and attention that football gets in other countries in the world is incomparable with what happens here. So you have to do stuff that is kind of out of the box to even get a little bit of attention.
Hey, Witty, today's National Lasagna Day. You look like a guy who just likes a good old-fashioned plate of lasagna.
Foul. No, I quite the opposite. I hate lasagna. Yes. I hate lasagna. Thickness. I'm not even like that like big of like a cheese guy, just generally.
What?
Like I just like heavy, thick, gross cheese. Terrible. Terrible. Wow. Texture is awful. You could not pay me to eat a plate of lasagna.
If I invited all of you over for dinner and I made a homemade lasagna, you'd Uber Eats something else?
I would pretend like I like it. I might eat like a big meal beforehand and say, oh man, I'm sorry, I'm full. I'm full, man. I ate a late lunch. I'm sorry, man. I just can't put it down anymore. No, terrible.
I hate the guy that's like, it comes over for a dinner party. Like, oh, are you hungry? No, I ate already. Like, oh, get out of here then, jackass. Like, why
are you coming to dinner party? Yeah, no. Lasagna, terrible.
What grown men have dinner parties?
I was going to say.
Crowder, you seem against the concept of friendship.
He is, actually. He is.
I'm not, Chris, I love friends, but like the thing is that, y'all, I'll throw you in it, Chris. Y'all do is ridiculous. Meet at a diner and have coffee and pie on a Wednesday night. No.
Yeah. Why not? Where do you hang out with your friends? Where do you hang out with your friends?
Tootsies.
Tootsies. We can have a conversation at Tootsies.
Yeah, you couldn't come up with a second place. By the way, I almost burst out laughing. I was listening to a podcast about this NFL Players Association story, and they were going through what happened with the guy, Lloyd Austin, who ended up getting fired. And it's like, well, you know, there was this receipt. It was for 700.
Lloyd Austin was the former secretary of defense.
Oh, defense. Who am I thinking of? Lloyd Howell.
Lloyd Howell.
Lloyd Howell has a receipt for $749 for a car service. The car service began at 10:01 p.m. and ended at 6 a.m. Where did he go in between? Tootsies. Because of course he did. Like, of course the head of the NFL Player Association is in trouble because he went to Tootsies. Like, that is the most predictable thing that has ever happened.
I was on his side till I learned that I wasn't invited and he was in South Florida. I'm like, come on, Lloyd.
Lloyd. 20 minutes away.
Well, Crowder, they're looking for a new president of the Players Union. And, you know, based on precedence, your credentials line up perfectly, bro. You should submit the resume. Chris Whittingham.
I'm not going to have Chris watch a YouTube clip on me because I'm going to Tootsies.
Chris Whittingham, appreciate you. Eat a plate of lasagna, though. Grow up.
Terrible. Right.
Appreciate you.
Thanks,
guys. We'll talk to you later. All right. More of these commercial breaks coming up on the Hockman, Crowder, and Solana show.
This is Hawk, Crowder, and Solana.
You don't know Ski Mask, the slump god?
I do not.